the Trish and Sarah Wrestling Podcast. I'm Sarah.
I'm Trish.
And this is our podcast. We talk about wrestling news and various topics from different promotions, primarily AEW, but also New Japan Pro Wrestling, WWE, and topics from around the wrestling world. Whatever we find interesting, and we hope you will too. We're a proud member of the Social Suplex Podcast Network, and you can find our content on our podcast feed, the Social Suplex Podcast feed, as well as on Twitter, Blue Sky, and YouTube. Please feel free to like, subscribe, and rate our podcast. We also have a store at Chopped Tees, so if you'd like to support us or just own some really cool quality pieces of merchandise, please take a look at shop-tees.com/socialsuplexnetwork. And the Social Suplex Network also has a newsletter, which is published bi-weekly at socialsuplex.com and has features, reviews, and tons of news from across the world of wrestling. We really encourage you to check it out. There's some fantastic features in there, and there will be a new edition up by the time this podcast goes out, so please go see what is up in the world of wrestling. It is Sunday, June 29th, 2025, and when we last left you, we were cackling our heads off at CM Punk and his heading to WWE's Saudi Arabia show, despite a vocal history of not wanting to go to Saudi Arabia, off he has gone. And the last time we talked, Punk had given sort of a bad promo where he sort of meandered through it and got lost halfway through. Last weekend, I should qualify myself by saying Friday the 20th of June, we had SmackDown where Cena was due to have a match against R-Truth, the returning R-Truth that they paid a bunch of money to and stopped his release and re-signed a contract. He's done essentially nothing since then other than have this match with Cena, but that's a story for another time. The match with Cena was essentially just an excuse for a disqualification and a post-match beatdown and a Punk run-in where Cena put him through a snap into a Slim Jim table and then proceeded to do a retread of the pipe bomb promo from 11 years ago, except this time he did it, or 14, longer than that. I don't remember. 14? Am I losing my brain?
14 years ago?
Yeah, 2011. Yeah, okay. Yeah. There's so much going on with this that dates are just not in my brain right now. Basically did a promo, a pipe bomb promo, where he made Punk look like an absolute idiot. Punk had to lay there with the camera on his face, like in close-up, for 12 minutes, pretending to be unconscious, occasionally moving around, while Cena delivered a bunch of insults, including saying that Punk changes his value more than he changes t-shirts, calling out he weirdly called out Matt Cardona and Nick Nemeth and Claudio Castagnoli in this as like the aside that Punk originally did with Colt Cabana. He called Punk a capitalist, a millionaire, Mr. TKO. He said he was the greatest in the world for 7 minutes, 14 years ago, and said, "Thank you for letting me rip off your promo to make you look even more foolish." And at the end of the promo, Cena was getting cheered like crazy. And this was the end of that sequence in, it wasn't quite the go-home show, but it was the go-home show for the go-home show. Trish, this was kind of an interesting way to go. Did you enjoy this new pipe bomb for a new age?
Did I enjoy this new pipe bomb? I guess it depends how much you like people being humiliated.
Maybe how much you like one person being humiliated.
Yeah, maybe. it's kind of funny because I remember watching the original pipe bomb promo live. I used to work nights at that time, so me being up at like 3, 4 a.m. was just like a normal occurrence. Kind of still is for anyone that knows us, isn't it?
True.
But I remember that occurred, yeah, after a match between Ron Killings, as he is now, and John Cena. And for most of it, Cena wasn't dead, okay? He wasn't dead after, in the ring. He ended up listening to it, leaning up against a turnbuckle post.
Yes.
For most of it. He's sitting there. Whereas this time, they made CM Punk lay there for the entire time on your Slim Jim sponsored table, because that's where we are now.
Yep.
As Cena sits on the post and the heel world champion completely demolishes a top babyface. And there were so many funny defenses of this, because it's like, oh, Punk must be turning heel.
Yep.
Or he's going to get a big reply.
Yep.
On Monday. And then it didn't come on Monday. And then you knew it was going to be in Saudi Arabia and you were like, oh, he's not getting a big reply. And then it's like, my big question was the same thing that we asked last time. Why? Why was this allowed to happen? Who thought this was a good idea? And how much do they think they have leverage over him for allow this to even happen in the first place?
I don't know. It's baffling to me. I mean, it's baffling to me and it's not baffling to me. I think there's a part of punk that thinks this is good. Maybe not this particular part of it, but I think that this is his style, right? He does shoot comments on retreads of feuds that were better 15 years ago. Like, that's what he did in AEW. It's basically his 2021 plus persona. Like, this is all the guy has. So, I could see him convincing himself that this was great and that he did a great job here, but you know, he likes Cena, I guess. He wants Cena to let Cena humiliate him. It just seemed so counterproductive. And I don't know that, I think there were people defending it, but I'm not sure anybody thought it was good.
You're always going to get some, and especially that, you know, there's this thing in society now where people play into nostalgia.
Yeah.
And they will buy into remakes of a nostalgia just as much as they would kind of, consuming the original content.
Yeah.
Without realizing what actually made those things special in the first place. And yeah, was this probably the best promo I've seen this heel run? Yeah, probably. But that's because the bar is set pretty low when it comes to John Cena in 2025. But it's the same thing with the rest of this run. It's not achieving anything. It's not promoting anything. It's harming the baby faces.
Yep.
And when you look at where they are currently and where they were coming into the year, it's a pretty dramatic decline where you've got a number of your top people much less over than where they were at the start of the year. And that's not just, CM Punk. You can look at Cody Rhodes and, cutting promos after the show on Saturday saying, oh, you might like other baby faces more than me. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Like, that should not be the position that your next world champion is going to be in once he wins at SummerSlam. But yeah, it's this was a hit job, essentially.
Yeah.
Whether you think of it as anything else, it was a hit job. And then that's just continued into the theme of this week, really.
Yes. So they headed off to Saudi Arabia, happily or unhappily, who knows. But once they got to Saudi Arabia on Friday, during the day, there was a WWE fan experience in Riyadh. And the first video we had of Punk in Saudi Arabia was him shoving aside a child who was looking for a photograph, which sort of, it kind of only went downhill from there, folks. After that, they did a Q&A. At the fan experience, and Punk took a question from someone asking if he would apologize for his tweet to The Miz where he shit on Saudi Arabia. And this was his response at the fan experience. This guy wants me to apologize for a mean tweet I wrote 6 years ago. Hey, listen, legitimately had nothing to do with Saudi Arabia. I woke up and I was crabby and I wrote a mean tweet to The Miz and I apologized to The Miz. And sir, what's your name? Mohammed? Here, watch out. I'm going to step right here. Mohammed, I sincerely apologize to you and all of Saudi Arabia. I am not perfect by any means. Sometimes as human beings, we screw up. The beautiful thing is that everything is a lesson learned. And now here I am. You've invited me to your country and I'm grateful to be here. Thank you very much. So CM Punk has loudly and publicly apologized to Saudi Arabia for his tweet. And they replayed this in the arena in Riyadh during SmackDown. They did not play it on the television. It did not make the broadcast, but there were a lot of accounts of how they replayed this in Riyadh. This was, for my opinion, hugely planted. This guy, Mohammed, shows up later. Punk hugs him after the match at Night of Champions. He's standing behind Triple H during Triple H's post-show. So I don't think this was by any means a spontaneous moment. I think this is a planted person and a planted question because, as Dave Meltzer said today, somebody wanted Punk to apologize. Whether it was WWE, whether it was the Saudis or whoever, this clearly was something that he either wanted to do or somebody wanted him to do it. So, we had sort of humiliation moment number two. It's an interesting thing that, a lot of people pointed out, you did not think that you would see CM Punk apologizing to Saudi Arabia first. Of anyone he could apologize to, Saudi Arabia was not on my list of, oh, we'll get this publicly, but we got it. Trish, what did you think of this moment?
See, I don't agree. I think it was always more likely for him to apologize to the Saudis, knowing the WWE relationship when he went back there, than to apologize to anyone that he
couldn't do anything for him.
Yeah, or that he has had massive implications on their career, but believes it's all about him. Because that wouldn't be admitting that he was wrong. And I don't think he's admitted he was wrong here. He's categorizing something where he was using, you know, the human rights record of a country as something he just included in a mean tweet, like it's something off the Jimmy Kimmel show. Like, it's not the same thing. And it's the same thing I keep seeing people saying, well, he's matured, he's this, he's that. And I'm like, okay, right. So explain to me, one, this apology was not made, like, in any of the period of time between 2019 and 2025 until he knew he would have to go to Saudi Arabia. And by all kind of accounts, he'd already decided a few months ago he was going, right?
Right.
So it was an apology made for a situation because the situation determined it, not because the way he feels about anything has changed.
Correct.
Right. Secondly, has the situation in Saudi Arabia changed that there is a reason for him to change his stance on the country?
Of course it hasn't.
Did they not just execute a journalist 2 weeks ago?
Yep.
For treason because of tweets that were made around corruption in the Saudi royal family back in 2018?
Yep.
Did that not just happen? Is there not a wing in a prison in Saudi Arabia just for political prisoners who speak out against the regime? Nothing here has changed except for the fact that he has to work there. But he didn't actually have to go. He's chosen to work there. Let me rephrase that.
Yep.
That is the only thing that has possibly changed to change someone's viewpoint, because the human rights abuses are still there. Just because their sports washing has been massively successful, you know, with Newcastle United or the boxing or WWE, does not mean there have been drastic changes in the human rights of this country.
Yep.
So if you are going to stand on morality and you are going to stand on reasons not to go to Saudi Arabia, and then you are going to change them because you are going there as a choice, for what? Does that show maturity? That's not maturity.
Well, the maturity thing also pisses me off, because the man is 46 years old and he made this tweet when he was 41 years old. So this whole like maturity thing, it's like, we're not talking about some fucking teenager. We're talking about an adult man in his 40s.
Yeah. Yeah. This was his choice. He, you know, but he wants to stand on morality, and then it's all just a mean tweet. And then what was always going to happen? Everything else that he's ever said about Saudi Arabia starts appearing on social media.
Yeah.
Well, no shit. Because when you make your political viewpoints the center of your wrestling character and your public persona, what do you think is going to happen? And then people who bought into that, and there were plenty, will now look at everything else that you've ever said. Everything else where you've said your account is the only one that matters, and they're going to doubt that. And that will probably drive you more crazy than anything else. But I think you're right. I think it was planted. So there was two things that happened. So you had, the child that was kind of lightly pushed away at the fan experience event. I love how everybody decided that was an airport and all kids must, or it was all fuck them kids, basically.
Yeah, if anybody coming defenders. Up to you, take them out. You got to take them out.
Take them out. How old you got to take them out.
Throw them down. Violence, yep. Only answer.
Yeah, those kids have got to go, right? That was the attitude. But no, this was absolutely a plant, because of how they were positioned. But also, you know, the kid from that next day is there at that press conference as well, at the kickoff show. So they did everything to kind of try and change his image in Saudi Arabia across the weekend to make him the baby face. This wasn't part of some elaborate heel turn, as some people have been trying to point out this week. I thought there was an excellent comment on the board that this week after the video, the kind of pushing the kid have pulled out, relating back to Paige's pre-Double or Nothing promo around what happens when the lights are off, when the red light's not on. But yeah, it's like, he was going to apologize.
Yep.
So whether you think this guy was a plant or not, he was set up to apologize. And once he agreed to do this show, that was always coming. And they got as much out of it as they absolutely could. And you watch somebody who people idolize for his standing up to authority, whether it was a guy's or not, look exactly what Cena called him. You know, it made him the hypocrite. It made him the TKO man. It made him the sellout. It made him all the things that were said in that promo. And then you wondered, is he going to get anything back? Are they going to use anything to kind of rebuild this character going back to when he goes, you know, to the US? And Well,
Trish, I'm so glad you asked, because let's talk about the SmackDown that in Riyadh and Trish Punk's big go home promo in response to Cena's putting him through the table and humiliating him. Cena came out, started his promo, blah, blah, blah. Punk interrupted with the Doctor of Thuganomics theme music from years ago from Cena. He's dressed as Cena from, like, years ago. He comes to the ring, and he proceeds to give a diss promo that's a rap, but that isn't, and it's awful. It doesn't rhyme. It's delivered poorly. He's missing.
They edited it.
Of course they fucking edited it. It was bad. He missed words. He forgot where he was. He was trying to do this weird black scent where he was dropping his R's in like a way that he doesn't to give off like some kind of tough or street or like, you know, it came across a little racist to me, I'm going to tell you. But as a white person, I can also say rapping without an accent, just don't do it. Just find your own style. It wasn't good. The whole thing relied on a lot of shooty comments about burials. It took a shot at Nikki Bella, unnamed, right? We had really, really up-to-date references of the Marine and Macklemore, not to diss on Macklemore, and a reference to Kendrick and Drake that showed a complete misunderstanding of what that feud was about that kind of cracked me up because it's like the second time that's happened. Both of these men looked unbelievably old. Like, that was the thing that came across to me as much as, like, everything else was how old these guys looked all weekend. Punk looked old. He looked tired. It just looked sad. I mean, the stuff Cena was doing was dated when he was doing it. Like, it wasn't fresh. Like there was no kind of, like, I don't know. And the rap itself, like, and I should apologize because Trish and I teased that we were going to do, like, a parody of it as part of our show opener today. But it was so bad, I couldn't do it. We couldn't come up with anything because nothing we came up with was as bad as the fucking rap itself. Like, just so bad. So bad. And, like, at no point did he push back on being a hypocrite. It was essentially just a diss track for Cena. He didn't have any... the only thing he said was, like, you know, I had the Punk pipe bomb promo, which, again, 14 years ago, right? It was 14 years ago. Like, these guys have nothing else to do. And that's the part that makes me sad, because I feel like nostalgia can be beneficial, and I certainly understand why you'd want to go back to feuds of the past. But I also feel like they're just destined to let you down. I can't imagine anybody who was a fan of that back then looking at this now and thinking, wow, this is great. I'm so glad I got to see this.
He might as well have been the Miz out there.
Yes!
CM Punk.
He was a clown.
The anti-authority figure. The big rebel. The guy who was never on call. Is now the Miz.
Yep.
Amazing.
Yep.
I gotta admit, when we saw the picture, I just, I thought it was a mock-up. I was like, nah, you can't have forced him into doing this. And then I don't even know if he forced him, because I think he's perfectly fine with doing this shit now, it seems.
Thought it was great. Really? Yeah, thought he cooked.
Oh my God. Like, if you were to tell anybody a few years ago, this is where this guy would end up, you know, in his jorts and the Chicago Cubs jersey and his backwards hat, looking like one of those 50-year-old kind of people, like men that want to be in with the kids. It is very much that hello fellow kids meme, you know.
Yep.
This is where he's going to end up. You know, it's just with lines like, oh God, I can't even read them.
No. Here's a go. If you never said your prayers, ate your vitamins, or fixed your bald spot, you wouldn't be a pro wrestler. You'd be a Boston mall cop. And he did a terrible Boston accent, which I personally was offended by. Just like, just so bad. And he kept saying yo yo. Like half these lines starts with yo yo. When it comes to the best in the world, I'm your vessel, because millions chant my name and then they chant you can't wrestle. Like, this is the height of this. There's
Was this written by AI or ChatGPT?
No, it's just by, like, what's his name? The shrimp cinnamon toast guy.
Somebody wrote this?
Yes! He was on Twitter. Yes! He's married to Danielle Fischel. What the hell is that guy's name?
They paid somebody to write this?
Yes, he's on Instagram bragging about it.
I'd be in hiding. I don't think I'd be bragging about it.
Her
I think...
Jensen Karp. He used to write for WWE briefly. He's a rapper.
He's a rapper?
He's an ex-rapper.
Really?
Yes. He came to fame. Yeah, again, you can only imagine the kind of rapping that this person occurred. But yeah, now he does like a bunch of podcasts. He became like internet famous because he apparently found what he said were shrimp tails in his Cinnamon Toast Crunch cereal and then posted about it and blew up on Twitter. And then a bunch of women came forward with allegations that he was kind of... at best, unpleasant. Oh, right. He got milkshake ducked. So yeah. So this is the geniuses behind, shockingly, a white man behind rap. So there you go.
Okay. Right.
But yeah, someone wrote this, and in the best part, I got to show you this Instagram if you didn't see it, Trish. He's like really, really grateful for Punk being willing to be such a great, you know, collaborator on this. So again, we're not making this up, folks. He thought this was good. Okay.
Somebody wrote this.
Yeah.
A rapper.
Quote unquote.
A pretend rapper.
Quote unquote.
Okay. That actually makes it worse. I'm pretty sure that actually makes it worse. Like someone put real time into this and they thought it was good.
Yeah.
And they had this guy go out there and look like that.
Yep.
And do this promo, this rap, quote unquote. Even I sound stupid saying rap, never mind this guy. Right? And they made him do lines like, "You're a superhero now who works for DC, but no matter how hard you try, you'll still always be the Marine to me." What? And that's straight to DVD.
Yes, DVD.
Better find a PS3. I now understand you can't see me. Oh, no.
DVD is a very good, relevant reference in 2025, Trish.
Oh, no. I can't. They made this bloke do this, and he danced like a little puppet, and he did. And then he looks like he done all the posing shit for all their social media videos.
Oh, backstage!
And
then Triple H
is like, hashtag Punk Life. And I'm like, yeah, you fucking won, didn't you?
He didn't even have to force him. Punk is happy to do it himself.
Oh, no. He must have been killing himself. Like, and people are going to walk around with that fucking t-shirt on. Like, what are you doing? look, just so you know, right? If you walk around with that t-shirt on and I see you, I am not going to talk to you. I will be judging.
Oh, my God. It was
it's just so funny. Like, you could...
Punk Life, Doctor of Punkonomics. This is another good one. Get in while you can. In 6 months, he'll be gone, and I'll be still here having fun. He won't have time for you little people anymore. He'll be too busy washing underwears for James Gunn.
Why is the baby face calling the fans little people?
That's the least of the problems with that. Like, forget rhyming scheme. Forget iambic pentameter or whatever bullshit. Forget the fact that he said underwears with an S like my grandmother does.
You gotta hang your underwear.
Underwears. Oh, my God.
Okay. I can't believe somebody wrote this. I'm sorry. Someone spent time on this.
And then the best part was halfway through this rap, he takes the microphone away from his face. He's walked over to Cena because Cena's in the corner of the ring. And he's looking at Cena and he says to him, "I'm going to miss you." And he says it in such a way that like the camera caught it completely. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? Can we at least pretend a little kayfabe here? Like you're in the middle of this fucking thing whispering, "I'm gonna miss you." I'm just dying because I can only imagine the kinds of things this man endlessly complained about backstage at AEW. And then he's out there in Saudi Arabia, like just doing the worst, worst rap you've ever heard in your life.
This guy complained about music in run-ins, right?
Yeah, and now
has like 50 run-ins.
Right.
Music everywhere.
Unbelievable.
Okay, let's do Saturday. Right. Let's get through this because I can't read anymore.
Too good. Okay. So The actual match itself was at Night of Champions, which aired on Netflix and internationally and Peacock in the United States. And I will tell you, I don't watch WWE programming on a regular basis. Occasionally, I think the last thing I watched was the Elimination Chamber in Perth, or maybe it was that French show, whatever. I had had some herbal libations.
Australia, France. Yeah. It's all the fucking same, right?
It's on at a time I'll turn the television on.
That's the most American you've ever sounded.
Thank you. It's all the same. Australia, France, I don't know what to tell you. Simplement de. But yes, I had ordered some Mexican food. I was sitting, relaxing, watching some Bravo television. I'd had an herbal libation, and somebody said, oh, the main event is starting now. And I said, you know what? I'm going to take one for the team here. I'm going to help my girl Trish out. I'm going to actually fucking watch this thing. And dear Lord God, was it worth it. This match was so fucking bad. And I don't know. I think we'll get into, I want to have like a side conversation about like how bad WWE is and how like so many people are gaslit into thinking it's good. But like for right now, like, so the match starts, Punk comes out, the entrances took for fucking ever, right? Punk comes out, does his entrance, goes to the middle of the thing. He does that thing where he comes out and sees the crowd and then turns to the camera and is like, wow. Like, he's so overwhelmed with the incredible crowd. And, like, the crowd was fucking insane. They were absolutely insane. They were the best thing about the whole match. Like, they made the match, like, they upped the match by, like, 2 stars, right? It was that, like, you know. And I said to myself at the time, I'm like, people are going to convince themselves that this is good because the crowd was so hot for it. But, yeah, the crowd's insane, right? So Punk goes out, gets into the middle of the ring. He's doing all this bullshit emoting about like how incredible this is, yada, yada, yada. Cena comes out. He's got his little hand towel. So we get all of these close-ups of Cena, the hand towel, and Punk. And like they're both trying to emote. They both look weirdly like robots. Like they don't look like real people. Like they both have this plasticky quality to them. And Punk looks old. And Cena doesn't look like a real human being. And he's not. He's doing this Cena emoting thing he's doing in this heel turn where he's pretending to be a robot. And then occasionally it's like the robot feels feelings. He's really. He's giving me Data in Star Trek Generations, like big time. So I'm just like, okay.
Just a Tin Man.
I'm just a Tin Man. Like, what is this human emotion I'm feeling? Are these this water coming from my eyes? So it was like this. So the match starts, and these motherfuckers go immediately into a headlock, and from a headlock to a wrist lock, and back to a headlock, and then a wrist lock. And it was just basically that for the rest of the match. They did so, like, they would do these little sequences of, like, 2 and 3 moves, and then they would both be wrecked. Punk especially was, like, the color of a fucking tomato for the whole thing. And he was doing a little bit more than Cena was. I will give him that. But every time they had to fucking stop. And they stopped. And they stopped. And they stopped. And they paused. And this whole thing, I said this, it made Mox versus Cope, which is one of the worst matches I've seen this year so far, it made that look like Hangman versus Ospreay, like from a speed perspective. Like it was just, what the fuck was that? Just bad, slow, bad. So finally we get to the point where they realize, or Cena realizes he's not gonna be able to beat Punk because Punk is so good. And so he goes outside and gets the belt. He's gonna do another belt shot like he has been doing, but the fans start chanting no and Cena puts the belt down, right? And this is like, oh my God, are we getting a face turn here? Like, this is the part where he's emoting, like he doesn't know what emotions are. And he's like, I don't understand what I'm feeling. So I can't remember exactly what happened here. Like, I think they took the ref out, right? And so I was like, okay, shenanigans time. Out comes Seth, Braun, Breaker, Bronson Reed, and Paul Heyman. And
No. Call him by his full name.
Which?
Seth.
Seth freaking Rollins. Sorry. And I will say this again, I don't like to watch a lot of WWE. Seth Rollins is fucking serving cunt. Like, I'm like, Tunnel Talk has to watch this. Like, he prances down, he takes off his coat. I'm like, oh, I can see why so many men hate this. Like, I'm just like, oh, like, just absolutely fucking serving. And I'm like, he's taking forever because Punk is about to die because he did some big move on Cena right before this happened. And so he is literally in the, like, again, heaving for breath, blown up like you wouldn't believe, absolutely dead. And so they're stalling for time as much as possible, right? So they come into the ring and Cena's like out of it. Punk has done something to Cena. So Braun and Bronson go after Punk and the noticeable slowness, like there was a point where Braun was like trying to go for a spear on Punk and he absolutely had to stop because it was clear like Punk could not handle them going anywhere near as fast. Like they were in half speed the whole time. So They eventually go to the outside, and Punk does this, like, not a dive, but the thing, is it enziguri, the thing where you step the rope on? I can't remember the names half the time. But basically, he fucking botches the fuck out of it. He overshoots it. He almost lands on his head. Bronson Reed saves his ass by grabbing him. He goes to the floor.
Oh, that's so funny, because I've seen the clip of that, and it's Bronson and Bron Breakker trying to save him.
They saved his ass. He was going to break his neck.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he overshot it terribly. So then they try to put him through the table, but he doesn't jump. So in order to, they don't want to overshoot it, so they're only going to gently lift him up, but he doesn't jump at all. So it doesn't really look like they put him through the table as much as they sort of gently shoved him into it, right? So Seth is in the ring, and of course the announcers are screaming that he can't cash in because there's no official. So what's his name? Charles Robinson's come rubbing down because this match is all fucking callbacks. And Cena pounces on him, and I swear to God, the dude ended up in like fucking North Africa. He fucking flew, right? Then we had shenanigans. Penta came out. Penta did not rush to the ring. Penta gently danced to the ring. Then we had Sami Zayn come out. Then we had Bronson Reed or Bron Breakker. One of them disappeared with those guys to the back. Somebody else was left. There was like a shenanigan thing where they were trying to take out Seth, and like they were working with each other to take out Seth. And then they hugged, like Punk went to shake his hand, and it was like, oh my God, this is the face turn. Like they love each other, and Cena's emoting like crazy. And then they did a callback to his Elimination Chamber heel turn where they did the hug, and then Cena did the face thing. And then he goes to give Punk a low blow, but Punk blocks it. And then, Seth catches Punk in the face with the Money in the Bank briefcase, and then Cena pins him and wins. Oh, and at one point, Punk got a visual pin, but there was no ref, so nothing happened.
Of course he did.
Yeah, of course. I mean, come on, Trish, come on.
He's not been pinned clean ever, so.
No. Okay. And that was pretty much it. And it was just, like, the end was just. The match itself was not good. Like, and people, I've heard people today saying, like, well, you know, the beginning part of the match was pretty decent, and like, it was the best. And this is the thing that terrifies me. People are like, well, this was the best Cena main event, like, match that he's had since he's come back. And I'm like, what? Like, what? Like, if this was the best, how bad have these other fucking matches been? Like, this was awful.
Pretty bad.
Awful.
Pretty bad. Yeah.
I don't feel bad for skipping it, but, they just both looked really, really old. They didn't look good. The match wasn't good. The angle did nothing for Punk. Basically, he's done. They're done with the match. They're done with the feud. And he's going to go back to fucking feuding with Seth Rollins at some point, apparently, because they hinted on that like crazy. And, you know, that was it. I don't see how... let me ask you this, Trish. Given what I'm describing of the match, do you think that it was worth the amount of humiliation Punk endured this week in order to get this fucking match in Saudi Arabia?
As a business, I think it's a huge mistake. I think they've exposed him in a far worse way than anything that's happened elsewhere over the last few years.
Yeah.
And I feel like they're rolling into their middle of their summer now with a number of characters who just feel completely cold. And he now feels cold. And it's like, okay, you're going to get the Cena face turn, right? After SummerSlam.
Yeah.
And he's going to do the last few months, and that's going to carry the last few months. But I think there is definitely a question of where are they going to sit in January? Because there's a lot of numbers here that I don't think you can even judge right now because of Cena being in his last year, especially live event numbers.
Yeah.
I think they're really kind of covering up of where are they actually right now. And I think it doesn't look great. Yeah, I don't think there's a strong enough bench underneath. There doesn't seem to be talent coming through. We're relying on people in their 40s and 50s continuously now. All the kind of talent that we're moving upwards, even, you know, even if they weren't young but were kind of fresh, they're all kind of pushed to one side. NXT seems to be, particularly for the male side, like a complete stopping gap now. We're not seeing any movement up. You've got an Evolution card that they were going to run some form of Liv Morgan and Nikki Bella match. Like, what does that say about a division that has, you know, Bianca Belair, that has Rhea Ripley, you know, that still has Becky Lynch and other people like
Io
that.
Io Sky,
who has pretty much dropped off the face of the planet in terms of big moments since WrestleMania. And Oscar, who has to put over Jade Cargill, who, right, you know, like, you know, everyone says, like, Bryan Danielson trained Jade Cargill. I think he should probably disown that.
Yeah.
At this point.
Yeah.
I think I would disown that at this point because she is so horrific in the ring that you know, she is not getting over. In fact, when she gets cashed in on at SummerSlam by Naomi, they are going to cheer the fuck out of that. And they're not going to cheer the fuck out of it because it's a cash-in. They're going to cheer the fuck out of it because they like her far more than they like Jay Cargill.
Yep.
That shows that that's the level of performance that she's put in since she's joined that company. So it's hard to see where this continued growth that they, you know, constantly need will come from. And maybe they'll do a quick thing to get them through WrestleMania. Maybe they'll have Sami Zayn, for example, win in Saudi Arabia, win the Royal Rumble. That seems to be what they're setting up for. And he has the fairy tale thing, you know, to chase back to WrestleMania and they give him the belt. Okay. Then what? And I don't see enough then what at the moment. I don't see anything where you've got the moving up, where you've got this youth movement. I think this is where you're seeing a real kind of comparable contradiction to AEW right now.
Yep.
With the direction that they've gone since January compared to this one, where this show feels old, the people on it feels old, the characters feel old, the content, the stupid fucking 2018 knockback Miz promo that Punk did on Friday night, that stuff feels old.
Who, you said this, but who do they have on the bench, right? They've got nobody. There's no young guys. They've Chad Gable's out for 6 months. I don't think his freaking gimmick is great, but you can't argue that he's probably one of their better wrestlers, and people seem to like him. You know, are, you know, Austin Theory and Grayson Waller doing anything? The tag division is died to death, you know. The Wyatt Six is doing nothing.
It was never going to, but people got excited for it.
What is it? Now everyone's then really hyped up about Karrion Kross? I mean, like...
Yeah, right. Yeah,
he took
right,
a back bump. Let's do, like, what the fuck? So, like,
level are we in? Like, what is this shit? Yeah.
Like, and unless they get somebody, like, as a big free agent, which I, you know, I don't, maybe, but you, it, who it would be is curious. They seem to have people down in NXT, but they're not, like you said, they're not moving anybody up, even though it feels like you keep hearing, oh, they're going to move these people up soon, they're going to move these people up soon. It doesn't seem to be happening.
The thing is, like, who are the available free agents at the end of this year, right? Like, Joe Hendry.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you bring him in, you've got LA Knight, it's the same thing, same gimmick, right?
Why are they paying for Joe Hendry if they could get him for free?
Well, yeah, yeah, and, you know, is the mean thing kind of...
Run its course,
you know, they don't tend to stick with them. Look at Zack Ryder, you know, is he now replaced by Mr. Iguana? I love Iguana, I just...
I don't want him there. What's, whatchamacallit doing? Oh, I lost my train of thought. Derailed big time. Anyway.
But, and then, yeah, Mike Santana, that's the other potential free agent. And he's had some good success in TNA. But is that a game changer? Probably no. Is it someone that's going to get stuck in NXT? Probably yes. So it's hard to see where the next people on the uprise are going to come from there that are going to continue to gain momentum, because you never gain momentum or continuously gain momentum from just using old faces. I think Todd Martin, who you all know that, you know that The Fix is my secret favourite podcast each week, right, on The Torch, and he made a really good comparison where to 2002. So 2002 WWE, you have the influx obviously in 2001 from WCW, but 2002 is when they bring in, you know, Hulk Hogan, the NWO. They put Hogan over a just returned from injury Triple H. If you go actually, if you watch like the Triple H return from MSG, and then like the silence when he regains the title at WrestleMania from Chris Jericho, and then him losing a month later to Hulk Hogan all in one go, you'd think this is the most batshit booking you've ever fucking seen. And yet they're doing so many similar things now. But it wasn't just that, you know, they had a number, like Roddy Piper was all over TV. They did a Vince McMahon Bret Hart series running into WrestleMania 19. There was all this stuff where they took all the fresh young kind of talent, or even the ones that were aging but like had gotten hot during the Attitude Era, and said they're not as worth as much as these older guys coming back in.
Yeah.
And they got away with it for a lot of 2002, right? You watched SummerSlam 2002, which is actually a really good pay-per-view, to be fair, with Shawn Michaels, Triple H, another guy that came back and had the title by the end of the year, Shawn Michaels. You know, they had all these talent, and you would have thought, oh, this is still a hot company. But actually, everything underneath it was already falling to pieces. And then when they got to WrestleMania 19 in Seattle, and it's not just Seattle's fault, you can't just blame Seattle for this, right? That product was cold, and Stone Cold versus The Rock was not a success in business. you know, the Hulk Hogan Vince McMahon match. Sorry, it's Hulk Hogan, not Bret Hart. No one shout at me. is it Hulk Hogan? Oh God, my memory's fucked. I don't fucking know. But you know, let's go back. You know, Rock and Rock and Stone Cold is now cold match. Yeah, the biggest match in that they had in the company a few years before. And The Rock's in and out, he's a movie star sort of thing. Stone Cold lost a lot after they buried him for taking his ball, which was massively, massively detrimental when you look back at it. It's now not a big thing. And then what do they do at the end of that show? That's going to be the big thing for the next semester of the summer. Oh, we debut Bill Goldberg. And now it's 2025.
And we're heading into a Bill Goldberg title match.
And Gunther has to face Bill Goldberg. It is 2002.
I think, well, to finish this up, because that was not quite the end of the weekend, once the match was over and Cena left the arena and the show went off the air, Punk did come out. He, like I said, he hugged Mohammed. He hugged the only two women I saw in the arena the entire night. And then Triple H.
Sorry.
No. And I think it's worthwhile pointing out that women are allowed to go to these things, but they have to be accompanied by a male relative, such as a husband or a father. They cannot go by themselves because that's not appropriate. 2025 people. Anyway, they had a post show where Triple H did an interview and said, they talked about Punk and they talked about Punk's apology. And Triple H says, I was privileged to watch Punk grow as a human being, to step out there and apologize to the people of Saudi, to just cherish where he is at in life, where he's at in life and his career and the things he gets to do and the opportunities that he has. And I was incredibly proud of him. And that was just the cherry on the shit sandwich of CM Punk's week, that Triple H is proud of him. And Mohammed, meanwhile, standing behind him the entire time. Like, if you want to just, like, I don't know. There you had, you know, what was big, big political statements that we had, Triple H standing next to Linda McMahon, Triple H standing next to RFK Jr. He's proud of CM Punk, and I'm sure CM Punk is proud of the nice fat paycheck he's gotten. This is just bad. It was bad. And I think one of the things I wanted to talk about is a little bit of the disconnect I have when I watch WWE and then I listen to people or I read opinions from people who I respect who are like, oh, the match was fine, or this was fine, or that was fine. And I'm like, how? I almost feel like there's like an indoctrination sometimes where like you watch so much WWE, you start to think that things are acceptable instead of like you're just going into it with like a look. And I think that's a thing that happens to non-WWE fans who listen to people complain about AEW or talk about how something in WWE was good after they've watched it, where it's like they come at, it's like an Emperor Has No Clothes moment where you're like, how do you guys think this is a positive, right? Like, how do you think this match was good? How do you think they were putting on anything good? Like, this was shit. Like, why are you afraid to say it? Or like, do you not think it was shit? Like, I don't know. I mean, I get that everybody has different tastes and stuff like that, but I can't see how you can look at the quality of wrestling and like think, you know, this is the number one company and it should be.
I think there's two things of it. And I just wanted to look something up because listening to you like talk around how Triple H talked about him, I thought, God, this reminds me back when they had their feud in like 2011 and he's like still with his arm over him afterward and taking a piss and whatever. And then I realized like, and then he squashed him at the match. And I thought, what match was that? What event was that at? And it was also at Night of Champions. So I just wanted to Google that then because I was like, hang on a minute. Yeah, it was. It was at Night of Champions. So don't tell me that wasn't planned out nicely. Oh my God. That's very funny.
Unbelievable.
Oh, yeah, at the end of the summer of Punk at Triple H.
Mm-hmm.
Two times in... Mm-hmm. In 14 years, never mind. I think there is an element of people who just enjoy the kind of the razzmatazz style presentation, who are just involved for, you know, they live in the Instagram moment style of consuming content, and that will very much appeal to some of the, you know, for people that consume some of the WWE stuff. I think there is an element to that that we see across when you look at how social media is consumed and that sort of thing with the moments, right? So they still have that crowd. They still play to that crowd. Can you look at it and think it's a great wrestling product? No, it's not. It's not a great wrestling product. It has occasion where it can be. You know, they have some fantastic workers in that company.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
But they are not the people on top right now. And they haven't been on top for a long, long time.
I was going to say, they rarely are.
Yeah. And they're great storytellers. Well, occasionally they get time to shine, but that's not happening right now either. And that's why they are where they are this year. And that's why you can see the momentum changing. And maybe you can't see it in the ticket numbers yet. But as I said, I think Cena has a huge amount to do with that. And we're going to see a lot more come January next year. And maybe that feels like too long to wait, but it isn't. You know, that's just the way, it's the way wrestling is. It'll be the same. New Japan, I'm hoping it'll be the same. We'll talk about them we'll later. We'll
talk about that later.
Yeah.
Don't shoot your load. I guess
it... with Tanahashi, you know?
I think the nostalgia thing, like, I get it. I certainly have some sympathy towards it. But I think, you know, somebody I was comparing this... Punk was comparing the Cena run right now to Sting and saying that Sting looked better than Cena has. And, you know, my comment on that was Sting was more protected than mm-hmm. Cena has been. He only did tag matches. And he, at the end, when he had really started to noticeably break down more, he was only doing plunder tag matches where it was easier to hide his deficiencies and sort of protect him a little bit. And that's another thing that I find so fascinating about this, where I also wonder to some degree, like, obviously you bring Cena back, you've decided you're going to do a retirement run. You know, WWE has to have him in singles matches. They're not going to put him out there with a younger person. They're not going to use his retirement as a way to get somebody else over, right? Like have his feuds, other than Cody, like, he hasn't feuded with anybody younger. He hasn't really...
But that's the problem with putting him as the heel, right?
Right.
If you put him as a babyface, he doesn't look half as bad because they can all bump for him.
Right.
And you can do younger heels and make that work. And then if you had him killed by a heel... that would be potentially so much more impactful than what they're going to do with giving the belt back to Cody in the month.
It just feels like there's a degree to which you can almost say, I probably would have to, this is a half-baked theory, but you could almost say that if for all their talk about like nostalgia and all the pushback, they're almost not even going to protect the people that they want to protect. You could say the same thing about Goldberg. Like, Goldberg's on the news talking about how his shoulder's wrecked, his injuries are really bad, he's in really bad shape, so let's go put him out there with Gunther, of all people, to have a match with. And I'm sure Gunther's going to bump and everything for him, but it's still a singles match. If the guy can't move, there's a limit to how good this can be. And it's just
he was out of breath walking down to the ring.
Yes, he was sweating. It's like, he looked like shit. He looked horrible, right? And again, I'm kind of like... you know, if you want people to tune into this and think this is good and exciting, why are you setting it up in such a way that these guys are going to be exposed? Or is this just another element of, like, the wrestling is the least important part? Like, doesn't matter. Or is it also like they'll just, you know, they'll tune in no matter what? Like, I don't know. I'm just sort of fascinated by this. Like, they haven't done a lot to help Cena out. They haven't, you know, they seem to be putting these guys out there and just letting them get exposed. And I'm just not sure what the benefit to it is.
I don't even know if they know right now. I think they just think... I think there's an element of untouchable kind of thinking. And that never goes well for too long. Wrestling has not changed. It's still the same business.
Yeah.
And there are a number of mistakes being made that weren't being made that they will prove costly. Yeah. And you can have a long tail on that. You can drag that out for a few more months as you can, you know, flood the entire... industry with more content than you can ever imagine, as we're doing it currently. You know, you don't feel like you can go a week without a show currently, but it will have an effect. And it's one of them. I think it's harder to look from the outside because you see like that Saudi crowd reacting to that match like they do, and you think, God, is this stuff, you know, really over? Is it like thing? But then you realize, no, these people are over because of what they've done in the past.
Right.
They're not over because of what they're doing now.
Right.
And that is a dangerous road to follow. And it's funny because moving our transition over to AEW.
Let's go.
Yeah. So.
Hey, football fans. Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger fuel centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
And I'll mention why I'm saying that in a second. So there's been a lot of talk about the Death Riders this week, especially because Moxie's doing his kind of big heel bit before Paige's reply. you know, leading up to the main event of All In. And there's this feeling that everything might now be worth it.
Mm.
But I can't help but feel the thing that changed this year for me with AEW, and the thing that I think is the most pivotal in their upswing, is the removal of so many of the old guard at the start of the year.
Yes.
So you had that week where MJF did the promo with Jeff Jarrett.
Yep.
Absolutely hated promo. Rightfully so.
Yep.
Misogynistic bullshit. Right? And then that same week, you also had a 12-man tag where they put the Learning Tree with the Death Riders on Collision.
Yep.
And the graphic just set people off. And it wasn't that it was that bad a match. It was just people were tired of the same people in the same spots. Never mind the lack of kind of any sort of sense in that booking in terms
Logical.
Of... Jericho's group teaming with the Death Riders and the comedy element and everything else and the fact that these were feuding previously or anything like that. It was just they were sick of seeing the same faces. And AEW for the last few years fell into that kind of nostalgia thing and had the tail, right? So you had Punk come in and you did the whole run. And then you got stuck in this thing where the BCC dominated pay-per-views and dominated programming for like 3 years. It didn't move.
Nope.
It was just Brian Danielson's on one show, John Moxley's on another, and that is like the centre of our programming. And it doesn't matter who's got the belt. Oh, and then we've got Max doing everything like that. Okay, fine. But it's like, and then you had Samoa Joe. And Joe is a great addition to that, but it's another person from that kind of thing. And then we did the whole Sting retirement thing. So it's like, it's not even like you're looking at individuals, what you're looking at is like a cumulative of all, and then Jeff Jarrett, which we got out of hand, you know, it was a cumulative of all these faces that were taking up this most of this programming. And then the people underneath, these younger wrestlers who were, you know, who are the, you look at it this summer, they are the attraction of this brand.
Yep.
People want to see them succeed. They want to see them get time. They want to be invested in their stories. We're all pushed to one side. And that week, and I think back a bit, so the 12-man tag is the main event of that Collision.
Yes.
The opening of that Collision is the Christopher Daniels retirement match with Adam Page, the Texas Death Match, which drew the rating against the NFL. Wasn't the big old guy 12-man tag with the world champion. It was the Texas Death Match that drew the rating because Page rules well with women, and that's what drew against the NFL that night. But it was also a case of someone like Christopher Daniels being used as a plot point rather than being something that dominates the show. So that feels like the most pivotal week to me, because after that, we ditched the godforsaken Jeff Jarrett MJF thing.
He's barely been on television since. I think he had one backstage segment. Yeah, as he should. Good. Agreed.
Yep. There's no place for a major feud with Jeff Jarrett, I'm sorry, in 2025.
Yeah.
Comedy
no
jester, fire.
Yeah.
No. Comedy jester, fine, don't give a shit. But nowhere near the top of the card. What are you doing, right? Yeah. And then we had the thing, and then we also involved with, obviously, the Copeland Mox feud was at its height of disaster at that time as well.
Yep.
Copeland's now not on TV. That's more time freed up. Was every week, you know, both shows for a long period of time. He's gone. Danielson's been gone. It's actually at the point where you're actually frightened for some of these people to come back because you've got so used to watching the television revolve around Tony Storm, revolve around Swerve Strickland, Will Ospreay, Adam Page, like seeing people like Bandido get regular time.
Yep.
Which is good.
Mortos has been in more matches.
Yes. Seeing Fletcher kind of get the opportunity to do more, even though he's kind of moved backwards. But you have more of these guys and women on screen than the kind of old heads. Chris Jericho being gone as well.
Yep.
You know, that one's another one that feels like it could come back soon because of contract during and up and everything else. So we've lost so many of those. And suddenly all this TV feels so much fresher and so much more alive. And that's, I think, is the biggest difference maker in the feel now to the first 3 months of this year.
It's been a huge benefit to them. It, like you said, it's freed up a lot of time. It does make you a little bit nervous about people coming back. It's one of those things that you have to sort of be like, wait and see what happens. But it, you know, I know that there's this sense that AEW is doing a lot better, and I think that's an accurate sense. Like, the shows are much more enjoyable. They are doing better. Things are more fun to watch. I don't think anybody's trying to sit here and say every problem has been solved, everything is fixed, everything is perfect now, because I don't think that's the case. But I also know from watching AEW for a long time that they've never had everything been perfect
No company ever has. No! At the end of the day, if your top's right, people will allow for some of the stuff underneath.
Yes, if you're running things correctly, the rest of it is going to roll along and you'll put up with some bullshit here and there or for 20 minutes in the middle of your show every week. Oh. Well, I also think, like, one of the things that's important is that it's not that the guys, old guys themselves are bad or that the nostalgia itself is bad. It's more like the ways in which it's being used. And we talked about it at the time, was it becomes so overwhelming and that's all you're doing that it's like, why am I having to sit through this, right? Like, why am I having to endure Jeff Jarrett and Cope and Jericho and whoever else, like, over and over again every week for, like, minutes at a time? It just wasn't a fun experience, especially when you knew how many good younger wrestlers were, like, sitting in the back. And that's not something that I'm really thinking about right now. I'm not watching the show and thinking about, oh, there's so many more talented wrestlers that I'm not seeing on a regular basis. They just seem to be utilizing the people that are available in a better way than they were 6 months ago.
Here's a question for you, right? So I was speaking to someone a little while ago, and they were talking about, now we have kind of the ending, maybe the Death Rider story is worth it, right?
No.
But here's my question to you. And I think this goes down to some of the confusion that there is, I see sometimes on Twitter, or people who are still obsessed with Darby Allin being the end of this story, right? Is this story the Death Rider story anymore? Or is this story now a continuation of the Hangman Swerve story?
Oh, that's a good one, Trish. I think it's a continuation of the Hangman Swerve story. I don't think it's a Death Riders. I don't think the Death Riders are driving the action the way they were for that period of time where things got really bad in, like, November, December, January, right? I think that the protagonists are driving the action. Moxley is an obstacle and not just, you know... It's not about Moxley as much as it is about Swerve right now, quite frankly, and Hangman too, and Ospreay to some degree, which I think has made it a lot better. So,
yeah, but look at it this way, right? So you go into Dynasty.
Yep.
The story of Dynasty, the last segment as they close, you know, into, they do the beatdown. But the only thing people remember from that episode was the I know stuff with Swerve and Hangman, right?
Yes.
And then the ending of Dynasty ends, not on, obviously you have the Bucks come back and that, but it doesn't end on Jon Moxley, like, with the title or anything like that. It ends on Hangman looking at this scene.
Yes.
Then you go into Double or Nothing, main evented by Ospreay and Hangman in the Owen Cup final. And the story is from Will Ospreay. Not so much about stopping the Death Riders. In fact, actually, it's only really Hangman that mentions being able to stop the Death Riders, and I've beat Moxley before. But it's like a side to, this is what you did to Swerve. You know, you need to earn your redemption. Then as soon as we come out of that, we go straight into the can Swerve and Hangman work together angle down in El Paso. It's a funny story, that one. But you go straight into that, and that is predominant what we've got now. So the story is not so much, can Hangman beat Moxie? We know Hangman can beat Moxie. It's that he needs to accept the help of those around him, including Swerve Strickland, in order to do so. So all the weeks going past, everything is built around this Hangman-Swerve relationship, right? So you do the stuff in Mexico City. He comes down, and he inadvertently kind of, you know, saves Strickland. Strickland overhears, and Prince Nana, sticking his little head out the door, overhears Paige talk to the Bucks. And as much as he says, you know, they, like, the Bucks are saying, oh, you're going to bring the title back from home to the Elite when you beat Moxley. The story is actually like, what did you do to Swerve? You know, you stay out of his business. I didn't ask you to do that. It's not, I need your support against Jon Moxley. And it's the same thing like last week. They have him suspended because the idea, I think, is that these two individuals together are so strong that we can't have it. And MJF basically said the same. It's like, yes, you know, you stay out of it. But it also, like, we don't want them aligning. So this kind of relationship between these two characters, for the second year in a row, quite funny, is dominating this main story, where the other person in it is not as important as either the Swerve Strickland or Hangman Page character, not in the match. And I think that's where some of the confusion is. Like, this is the dominant story now. And that's not to downplay that there isn't a Hangman Page John Moxley story. John Moxley's just reaching back into what they were doing in 2022, 2023. Yeah, they were rehashing some of the same lines, and I think we're going to see a reply this week that's going to play into some of those themes as well. But it's secondary to the story of Strickland and Page for me here. And maybe that raises the question whether that should have been the main event of this show. I think we've had that argument already. Mm. But that moment, then they're building to it. That's why they had they used the vehicle that a lot of people seem like didn't notice, of having Swerve suspended, even when they then had to put the footage on Collision the next day to go, you didn't get it. Are you thick? Here is walking Swerve Strickland out of the arena from the Bucks suspending him in order so you couldn't have him run in after he was like, after Hangman was attacked with the chain. You know, nice callback, by the way, to Revolution 2023. And, you know, Swerve also chucked him out of a train in a Texas death match. So there you are. But they had him removed from the building, so he can't have that moment. So you have that moment at All In. That is the moment to me. There's a part of me that feels like that moment will be bigger than even actually like making the pin at this current time.
Well, it'll be it should be a combination of the two. Like, the two should happen in concert, right? Like,
yes.
You know, and that, you know, I trust these guys to know how to climax it. I do think this is interesting, and I do agree with you. But I also wonder if this is not, and I feel like Allie would do a better job of discussing this than I'm going to, so don't hate me if I botch this, but I feel like there's some always a point in a wrestling narrative where if you're doing a good storyline, the focus moves off of the heel and goes on to the babyface who's chasing, rather than having it, you know what I mean? Like, so I agree with you on this, but I also wonder if this is not just a function of a well-executed wrestling storyline hitting that point where this perspective switches and suddenly the focus is on the babyface and not on what the heel has been doing.
I guess to a point, yeah. I just think that in general, the babyface is still chasing the heel in that scenario, right? So you have look at Kenny Omega and Hangman, right? It wasn't about somebody else. It was about Kenny Omega for Hangman Page. And as much as it's about John Moxley, I feel like it's still far more about Swerve Strickland. So
I feel to a degree. But I also feel like when you had Hangman versus Kenny, the question, there was as much a question of whether or not the Young Bucks were going to turn on Kenny as it was about whether or not Hangman was going to beat him. Like, I think at that point, everybody was like, okay, Hangman's going to win. The question is what are the Young Bucks going to do? Right. So in some ways there's a similarity there, which I don't think is a bad thing, but I think there's like,
well, they call back to it, haven't they? They call back to it with the Page Bucks promo with the, you know, what did he say? I've told you before not to stay at my business, which was a callback to the night before Full Gear 21. Right.
Yeah. But I also think that leads to another question, which is, I personally think that the addition of the Young Bucks to the storyline has also made it a lot better.
Yeah.
And has made things a lot more, for whatever reason, a more enjoyable and also simultaneously more chaotic, you know, in terms of not being able to anticipate every move that is going to happen in every match. But I just think that I think people are very quick right now to give credit to Moxley and the Death Riders and talk about how, you know, this actually was really good all along. And I think that I'm somebody who liked the beginning way more than other people did. Like, I'll stand by that and say that I think that the start of the program was better than people gave it credit for, but the middle was a fucking mess. And like, having to sit through that for hours and hours and hours at a time sucked. And I'm not necessarily willing to sit here and go back in time and say, oh, it was all worth it. Like, I think they could have executed things better than they did at the time. Like, I think that we could have had better storytelling than we were getting. So I'm not fully on board with just kind of retconning the whole thing and being like, oh, no, everything's great. But I appreciate that, you know.
It's one of those where I look at it and go, would it mean more or less if Hangman was chasing Swerve Strickland right now? Or the Owen final between Ospreay and Hangman had been to face Swerve Strickland? And I don't really see much difference.
Right.
And that's something that I always think of when you're thinking about value. But there's also an element to say where, from the other side, and you can decide whether this is Hangman being a hot baby phase or not. He's a top merch seller in the company this year.
Yep.
Okay, he was before, you know, that started with the MJF feud, but that's continued into this. Ticket set wise, you know, the Chicago show is the top selling show of the year. Moxie will climb out with a cage match with Joe. You've also got Ospreay and Hangman teaming. Next one after that is Hangman chasing. So you link that up with the Death Riders. Is it because they've got such big heel kind of persona that you're chasing them? I'm talking US, by the way, before anyone shouts at me about Mexico. And we'll definitely talk about that in a second when we talk about him. And then you've got, you know, ratings-wise. So I think this has been a really interesting program for ratings because they are not going in key spots a lot of the time. They're not going as much in opens. They're not going in Q5, which Max has taken back to it's my spot again.
Yep.
And, you know, you look at that. So, for example, there's little things that really kind of stick out where you go, it's hard to argue that the program between Paige and Moxley isn't working. When you look at, like, Grand Slam in Mexico, and it opens, and it does, even with a ridiculously low lead-in, because of 18 to 34. And then those 18 to 34 viewers turn up in the overrun 2 hours and 30-odd minutes later to save that number from being a disaster with the DVR issues and whatever, and have the second biggest in 18 to 34 on a card for that finish because it was promised in the opening promo. And then you get this week, and you have Adam Page and the Beast Mortos in the main event, not advertised throughout the show.
Nope.
It's the bad habit they kind of got back into. Yeah. We'll talk about the good things they did for him at Arena Mexico in a minute. But and then you have the overrun. And you think, how is this going to do? And then, oh, it's the second biggest in the demo on the show. In fact, when you look at the demo number for the main event for the quarter eight is bigger than the Kenny Omega Okada contract signing from 2 weeks ago on a show that did a bigger number. And the overrun was the highest segment in women. Oh, look, you know, another one of Paige's little demos. Last time that happened was a Carl Fletcher match in Norfolk. Funny how this always works. But it's hard to argue that the program isn't working when you can look at it and say that saved that rating on Wednesday. And it's hard to separate the two when you do that because for everything that you can say about Moxley, he's still a draw and a TV draw.
Yes.
And he will be there. You know, he works as many shows as he can.
Yes.
And he has put in terms of graft in this whole kind of last year, he has grafted, right? So it's hard to take away and separate that. And I think that's the argument you got back. He's like, look how this is doing. You know, look how this build to this does. And eventually, when we look at the overall number, that's the match that's going to drive it. Don't believe any fucking people that can't read comprehension, because that's annoying me this week. Like, that match will define what they do, because that's your last push match, that's your triumph match. We've been through this on the last one. But, and, you know, and this week was the hardest one they had to come through, because that's a crowd that turned, had a Hangman Page heel, you know?
Yes.
Back in that area near Seattle. So that was the one they had to come through, and they've done the heat angle, and you're going to do the big promo. And I think Moxie's promos have been good in this program.
Yes, yes, they've been much better. I feel like they've been, you know, they with an end point that everybody is moving towards, they're less incoherent and more like, okay, this makes sense, I get what's going on here.
And he's setting him up, right? He's setting him up for the reply promo, but he's also setting him up to triumph. You know, the language that he's using, we're very into death, have you noticed, again?
Yes, oh
yes. That's continued big time this week. But yeah, everything that he's using is setting up that babyface win to be as big as possible. So I can't kind of go at him for that at all, really.
It's the thing with Mox. Like, if he's in, he's 100% in, right? He's going to give everything he has to it. He's going to put everything he's got to make this guy, like, you know, he certainly doesn't have any objections to losing to Paige. And I'm, you know, I feel like he's probably relieved.
They've put out there that, you know, he was preferable to Paige.
Yeah.
And we've known before then that, you know, he's always seen Paige in a certain way. He just thought he couldn't get back there. So it's a case of it fits for him. I think there's a difference in the way they've presented the segments. Like this week, they had to do a big heat segment. We were expecting a big heat segment at some point during this. We knew there had to be one, right? But in general, they've had Paige be able to stand up and escape most of these things. So they've given the babyface the big moments. And what they've done quite cleverly is give the babyface the big moments on the shows that are going to be watched. And that's what we've seen this last few weeks, right? So you have Arena Mexico, where you have Paige open.
Yep.
They gave him a good leg up because there's a nice little device that they use. So this was explained to me by a few people that went to the show, is that you don't expect somebody on the card in Mexico unless they have a match. So if they're not advertised, you don't expect to see them. So they had that element of surprise to the audience as well when he came out. I think that helped with his reaction. There was a woman screaming, oh yeah, we had a joke. We've been around long enough. Trevor Dane's making jokes on us. What the fuck's going on?
I know.
There?
What the hell?
Come on. But
what did he say? Arena Mexico sounds like it's filled with 1,000 Trish and Sarahs.
I can't scream that high.
Listen, you couldn't handle 1,000 Trish and Sarahs. I'll tell you that for.
I don't think I could handle 1,000 Trish and Sarahs.
I'd hate myself so much. I'd be done.
It'd be like when you see that field of like those toys and one makes a noise and the rest do, and I'd be like, yeah, take the fucking batteries out now. Take the fucking batteries out. It is indeed. Yeah, so that was a good device. But yeah, there was one woman that was screaming so much. It was like Kevin Von Erich just walked in the room, you know, like or any of the Von Erichs from the in their heyday. But they gave him a nice little moment there. And then he did something that none of us saw coming, which was cut a full 5-minute promo in Spanish. And there's a thing about this. There's a couple of things I want to say about this, actually. And the first of all is... I don't like comparing it to CM Punk, okay?
No.
I don't like doing it.
No.
But when you look at how CM Punk delivered the rap on Friday's SmackDown, and then you look at the confidence that this guy had to go out there and deliver a promo in Spanish with jokes... I'm really pissed they didn't translate the one or two the two or three Miguels onto all the translations as well. Because that was, like, he had jokes. He was anticipating lines. There's a bit where he's saying, like, I'm banned from, you know, the arena during the main event. And he was anticipating them booing. And then he's like, but, pero. And he's like, that's something else. And that shows a degree of confidence I don't think we've seen for him for quite some time.
I agree.
Never mind the fact that... The other thing I want to dispel is there seems to be, I've seen this in a few places, that there's this thing that he was given this to either justify them being in the main event spot or to reply to the Rey Mysterio, WWE legitimizing Lucha Libre promo from World's End, from When Worlds Collide. We've been doing this too long today. and that's not true. This was, and I had this confirmed, this was his idea. This was something he wanted to do. It's something he was working on for weeks. And the fact that he is coming up with this stuff, I think it shows the level of preparedness that this guy has to lead this company that I don't think he had back in 2021.
I agree with
And
that.
That's not to say he didn't deliver what he could there. But I think sometimes you need to experience things at the top. You need to know kind of what's going to make an impact to be able to do that. And I don't think he had the confidence at that point to be go out and basically welcome an entire country, never mind a venue, an arena, you know, Arena Mexico, Mexico City, but an entire country, an entire Spanish-speaking population to their first show in Mexico City. It's what I really wanted to see from it. I didn't really know how we were going to get it. I wanted to see him go out and... Forgive me, because I can only sound like Gabe Kidd when I say this. Right? But I wanted him to go out there and say, you know, and show, grab it by the scruff of the neck and say, I'm the fucking man now.
Yes, yes, I agree with that.
I'm the fucking man. This is my company. It's my main event. It's my world championship. I'm the fucking man. And I'm sorry, I do sound like Gabe Kidd when I say that.
I think it's funny.
He's Norman.
I think that it's a positive thing, and I think it's one of the things that does feel different from the last run-up. There's just a confidence there that feels new and feels like earned, and it works really well with what the story they're telling. It works really well with the other stuff, and I feel like you know, it's just fun to watch. It's not the same. It doesn't feel like, you know, I think sometimes it's difficult to do these character changes, and I think Hangman is good at more subtle character work, obviously, and I think that's helping this, that it's not exactly what we saw, you know, 3-4 years ago. And I think that's only going to help, because you have to have that freshness or else stuff is just going to get really stale and really old quickly.
And it was subtle, because most people missed the actual, like, character moving story part of the promo, that this guy who's struggling to accept help is now talking about the difference that you can make when you work together. And then you get at the end of the show where he is accepting of, you know, the support he's got, and he goes back to the ring with Ospreay and Joe and the Ops and so forth.
Wrestling fans are very nice in many ways, but also very stupid. And I think just the number of people who are like, who are misunderstanding like key points of the very basic story that's being told on screen.
It's Telegraph from fucking space.
Oh my God. Like, oh, was Swerve hurt? Like, no, you dumbasses. He was told to leave the building. Like, you think they're going to waste Swerve and Hangman? Like, Swerve coming out to help Hangman, you think they're going to waste that on a random show in Washington State? They're saving that for the fucking pay-per-view. Like, it's the whole point of the goddamn thing at this point. Like, come on. Like, it just kind of baffles me. And like, oh, Hangman needs to understand he needs friends. Yes, we know. It's the whole point of the freaking story that they're telling. Like, I worry about people sometimes.
There was this thing where it's like, oh, it was just like pleasantries or just like something to show WWE off. It's like, no, it was a key part to the story. It's him realizing that. And yes, he is expressing his political views under a thing. And I'm sure we're going to see more of that in his title reign because that's who he is. And that's who people close to him tell me he is. You know, but it's like, it was a key moment in that story. It was a huge development in his pathway to All In. And they wrapped it in something that's going to be memorable. You know, yeah. When people look back on that show and they look back on Arena Mexico, they're going to probably remember two things. They're going to remember that promo and they're going to remember MJF Mystico's, and Mystico's entrance. Yeah, especially. But MJF, Mystico as a whole. That's the two things they're going to remember from that show. It's going to help him in terms of if he wants to explore working in Mexico.
Yes.
He's got that pretty much written now. So it's like, they're the two things. So that's what it's there for. And it's like, this is a really simple story that they're telling. Like, predictable is good sometimes. And especially with everything that's going on elsewhere.
Yes.
I mean, all right, we're going to do this now because I'm annoyed.
Oh.
Right. So if you haven't seen this morning on a non-televised...
Not a house show, Trish.
Non-televised in the rest of the world. Just it was televised in Japan on TV, but nowhere else. Hirooki Goto is no longer the IWGP World Champion, and Zack Sabre Jr. is. The end of the Goto Revolution was not televised, Sarah. It was not televised.
I like well, not for us this, anyway. You should be.
So New Japan, I spoke a little bit on the last episode about the queries I'm having New Japan after Dominion. And the one high point of that show, on a show that involved too much House of Torture, probably the worst match I've seen this year, to me, in the David Finlay evil dog collar thing where the dog collar fell off and the chain fell off. It's as bad as the Vikingo handcuff thing with Alberto Albertron. I'm watching Triple Me. I watch some shit these days. But the highlight of that show was still Goto's reign at Kurin. And the big question overall was, well, where do you go with that? Because you had exit ramps, right? So you did the big feel-good win back in February that was planned from before the turn of the year. And then you do quick title wins. We're racking up defensive. We beat Nagato. We beat Tanahashi. All of a sudden, we get to David Finlay. And I can see the logic at the time in beating Finlay. If you didn't want Finlay to have a small reign, and if you didn't want Goto to lose the kind of feud ender, considering it had been about his family. Okay, I get that. Right. Then you get to Dontaku, and maybe this is where it gets messy, because it was supposed to be Jeff Cobb. WWE pull him. It's no longer Jeff Cobb. We do Callum Newman. Okay. Then we move to Dominion. And it's supposed to be Naito. And then Naito doesn't stay. Because of whatever's going on there. And I'm sure we'll learn more as the year progresses about exactly what happened there. Mm. But you have Shingo Takagi. And you think, well, actually, you could do something new and fresh for Shingo. Seeing as we've wasted the end of LIJ. In fact, the end of LIJ didn't even come in New Japan. It came in CMLL last weekend. Like, how does that happen? How are you wasting the breakup of your most, you know, your biggest faction in the last 10 years, your most successful faction, your most beloved fan faction, the thing that's drove merchandise for weeks, for months, for years? How are you just waste that and you let the end of that faction happen in CMLL? Like, what are you doing? How is that maximizing this? And you could have got around that. You could have had Shingo Takagi. You know, maybe you turn him heel. Maybe you make him something. Maybe he ends up with a group with young wrestlers who could maybe, I don't know, overcome him. You know, that's why you put people underneath like that, underneath an experienced leader, right? So they can be usurped. I'm pretty sure that's how this works. No, he's just a standard defense. In fact, we're going to focus more on the fact that he's still not married at the end of the fucking match than we are on anything else. Okay, fine. So where are you going? Are we going to keep are we going to give Goto the defense record? Are we going to keep moving along through the G1? He's not drawing as strongly as he was in the spring, but he's still a level above pretty much everyone else in the company right now, especially now there is no Tetsuya Naito. Or are we going to do something else? Are we going to put a younger person over? Maybe a young heel, maybe, I don't know, a Takeshita. How about that? How would that work going into G1? A champion Takeshita. What the fuck's he doing in AEW right now? He stands behind Don Callis again and everybody else in that faction. Okada, yeah, we're going to tease in a Okada thing, but that's coming down the road, right? That's obviously not coming anytime very, very quickly in regards to a championship, so you can get away with that. Okay, he's going to face Bandido. That doesn't make any fucking difference. Like, you could have worked something out there if you wanted him to go in with that, and what would that mean for the G1? What kind of interest would that get from Western eyes if that's what you want? Which I'm not really sure they do at the moment, but that's by it by. No. What we're going to do is we're going to put the belt back on Zack Sabre Jr. And we're going to put the belt back on Zack Sabre Jr., who has been frozen this year. Never mind the fact the first reign was not a success from a monetary perspective. In fact, he was an anti-draw. And I like watching Zack these days much more than I used to. But he was an anti-draw. And the fact that you've seen the turnaround with Goto illustrates that. But since then, have we done anything to build him up? Have to make him feel like that champion that when you drop the belt to someone for the first time, it comes back to you like an Okada or a Naito or a Tanahashi in the last 10 years? Because that's the role we obviously see him in. And the answer is no. He's been cold as anything. He's been frozen. Nobody cared. There has been nothing to say, this guy is a threat. This guy should be the world champion leading in to the G1. There's been nothing. And that's part of the reaction today of people going, what the fuck is going on? Because this is not moving people upwards. This is not progression. This is not changing this company. Is this company just waiting for Aaron Wolf? That's a big fucking gamble to make. And yes, he's going to get the publicity to start. And if he takes to it, you may get that Ronda Rousey kind of impact at the very beginning. But who the fuck is he going to wrestle? Who the fuck have they got? Who are they building up? All right, yeah, Zack gets it. So we can run Shota and fucking Tsuji. Sorry, Tsuji. We can run Shota and Tsuji for the final of the G1 before the guy that they can't overcome. Zack doesn't feel like that type of obstacle. I don't know who needs to hear this. It's like, it's not just me. It's not just fans of the West. Like, you can see this. It's in your Japanese numbers. It's everywhere. Like, why are you doing this? Why is it just moving sideways, back and forth? So we have this, you know, this thing that people enjoyed. And what ended up with it? Now it's tainted. Because everyone's going to look back on it and go, you didn't make the most of it. You didn't do anything with it. It was just something to pass the time. And every indication I've got so far, and it's the first day, so everything can fucking change by the time we talk next week. Every indication I have is this was always what they were going to do.
Yeah, that was my going to be my question for you, is there's a lot of people who are like, well, this is Tony Khan's fault because he wanted to have a Zack Sabre Jr. defense in England. So he's to blame for this. But it,
okay. The impression I have from immediately speaking to people is that the plan was to go to Goto some point in early the year, and that was finalised towards the end of last year. And then before Goto got the belt, it was clear that it was going to go back to Zack before the G1. That's where I'm at currently with what we have. We'll see if that changes over the course of this week or anything else, and we can talk about that. But I don't get it. So the idea is this is not a pivot. Then why the fuck would you have Zack booked and looking like you have in the last 6 months? Why the fuck have you just not thought about doing anything in the middle? When you saw the Goto thing, maybe the times have changed. Maybe there's consequences of the departures of Jeff Cobb. Maybe there's consequences of the departures of Tetsuya Naito. But it's like, it's not the time. And I don't see the benefit. Do I see Zack holding all the way through to the Dome? Unless you're going to put him against Aaron Wolf? No, I don't. And I don't know what that means for... The idea of that for the IWGP there is frightening to me, because you've got this whole generation of young talent and they're not even getting a shot, other than Shota. But that's a whole other category in itself, isn't it? Like, they're not even getting a shot. They're not even getting that chance to be at the top and, you know, take the ball. They don't get the ball. The ball just goes sideways. It's like playing rugby league or something. And like, you've got somebody stood out on the wing and they're like on the left wing. And everyone's just like, we're just going to throw right all the time. It's just going right. There's not the opportunity. And that combined with the stuff with the junior title and it's, you know, having to sit behind Junkers Eyes match or the hardcore match. And it's going to be on a Korakuen because the juniors are now consumed to Korakuen shows for their title defenses. You know, they don't defend on the big show so much anymore. Like, I think that's detrimental. It might get you a good Korakuen crowd every week, but it's not exactly like improving how your juniors are looked at. The move not to move Hiromu up, whether that's about money, whether that's about his connection to Tetsuya Naito, whatever that fucking bollocks is, especially once you've kind of done what you did in the Best of Super Juniors. Like, that's someone you could at least have fresh blood in G1. And no, he's going to be out doing fucking Shinjuku Face anniversary shows. What the fuck is going on? And a lot of this is top stuff that's kind of been shielded over because the Goto stuff has kind of kept us so invested or kind of made that feel good feeling. And now you've splundered it. And what have we got underneath? We've got a million fucking House of Torture members. But the fuck Timu Hangman running around on his fucking shitty video. What the fuck? And he's... Oh, what is this company? Like, what the fuck is going on? Like, sort it out. Like, oh, we've got two British champions for Forbidden Door. Nobody gives a fuck. Nobody in this country gives a fuck. It's like, oh great, yeah, Zach's got the belt. He's coming back to these shores. They fucking did that. We did that at Rift Pro last year at the Doncaster Dome. You don't want me to talk about how much that crowd was or wasn't. Nobody fucking cared. What are you doing this for? Sell this to me. Because right now, I am not sold. And I'm not sold on this G1. And the fact that it's like, oh, great. So what do we get out of this? Where is this going? This is the same thing as the WWE stuff. Oh, we're going to bank on the fucking Tanahashi retirement tour. And then what? We're going to wait for Aaron Wolf? And if that doesn't work out, where is New Japan? Getting lapped by Pro Wrestling Noah? What the fuck are you? As I was laughing, I was going to say he's pissing on your grave, but it's not that far off.
So what I'm anyway. Hearing you say is Aaron Wolf is clearly going to join House of Torture in his debut match.
You wouldn't put it fucking past them, would you?
I wouldn't. Oh, I shouldn't laugh. I'm so sorry.
Sorry. I haven't had a rant for a while.
That no, kinda... you deserve one.
Yeah.
I have one every 15 minutes, so you would do.
It's bizarre, though, and I think... We should probably talk next week around the first 6 months of the year, and maybe we'll look at some numbers from different companies and things that have happened, things that haven't happened. Maybe that's a good thing for our catch-up episode.
Yes, which will be next week, friends.
Yes.
We will be double-dipping because our...
We have to get back on schedule.
We have to get back on schedule, we will be, obviously, Trish and I will both be at All In, so we will not be recording on All In Weekend, and we will have a full rundown of everything that happened and our thoughts for the following week, so...
Let things sit
for a bit.
The fact that I am not going to the Euros and I am going there should tell you all you need to know about the result of that match. And it's not Darby Allin, okay? Okay.
Everybody calm down.
Like, shut the fuck up. Can we at least get to Wednesday promo, please? All right. Have we got anything else on the sheet? Or have I just exhausted it by having a complete meltdown over the state of New Japan?
You did have a lovely meltdown over New Japan. I enjoyed it tremendously. I think that's pretty much it. I feel like
I want to go hug my Naru and sit in a corner and shake.
I was quite shocked myself when I read. I was like, wait, who lost to who? What? What's going on here? It is fascinating to see happen, as it does seem like there's a lot of choices that New Japan could be making.
I want to say it was an excellent match. I've watched this afternoon.
Sure, it was great.
Somebody send me it. It was an excellent match. I'm not taking away from the work in the ring. I'm not taking away from Zach as a wrestler. I just think the top end booking in New Japan is scary right now.
You can absolutely love a wrestler and still be like, the booking didn't make sense for them to get this win.
Like, well, that's John Moxley for me for the last year, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, there's definitely times where you're like, what the fuck is going on here? And I think it probably makes you a better fan when you think that way, because it kind of lets you, you know. But we all have our little guys. What can I tell you?
Indeed.
I think we crushed it today, Trish. Let's give ourselves a CM Punk-esque pat on the back. Great job.
Did somebody write this one for us?
What? That we crushed it?
Oh, all of it, right? That's what we do now, right? Do I need to get a baseball shirt? I should have bought a baseball shirt. And we should just do all these in baseball shirts, and then we just...
Backwards baseball hats.
I've got a hat. Right, here we go. There we go.
Oh, you look incredible.
Yeah.
You look amazing.
Yeah. I look like Kevin and Perry from Harry Enfield. It's amazing. You might remember that, actually. Did you ever see Kevin and
Perry? I don't know, but you know what? If I saw it, I might have... that's one of those things I see.
You did. Yeah.
Just send me a picture and I'll be like, oh.
You were here long enough. You probably did.
It's true.
Inherited British person. I just want to give a shout out before we go. Shout out. Oh, God, now I'm trying to sound young.
American.
I'm American. Shout out. No, shout I can't out. Do that. I can't do that without really going southern. It's like, shout out. but yeah, let's give a shout out to Daniel, who
sent us
some fantastic feedback from Arena Mexico, sent me some stuff for the newsletter for the CML section as well, and was awesome on Run Nation Radio, even if you're going to slight the London School of Lucha Libre. And I think what I'll do at some point, even for the newsletter, we might do things. I'll get Burridge to come on the show and explain that name, because I think that could be quite a fun thing. So the London School of Lucha Libre was owned. It's now defunct. It's been changed. It has a different name now. By Greg Burridge, who used to wrestle under Darren Burridge. And if you Google that, you'll never believe that guy trained with Ospreay. The Pucker one, mate. The Pucker one.
But Daniel was great on ONR, yes. And if you want an in-depth, long look into being at the Arena Mexico show, please go give it a listen. It is there. Was it last week's show?
Yes, and it gives you a great insight into how Mexican fans in general feel about different things. He goes through things about the AAA audience, about the CML audience, about how they view different people that used to be on NXT, like Adam Cole and Samoa Joe, that got big reactions. So it's a really good insight into that experience, and I think his energy really kind of translates really well. It tells you how great that felt, and even with the British slander, I can live with that because he was so good.
Definitely right. Go check it out.
Yes. You can also, while you're there, check out any of the other shows on our network, including the amazing Tunnel Talk. Yay! Woo-hoo! Yay! Even if Leah is incredibly nice to us, every time I log on and I can't handle it. But we are produced by... It was a good way to scrap the clothes this time, wasn't it? We are produced by the wonderful Leah of Tunnel Talk. You can listen to Tunnel Talk every Sunday as they break down the stories and characters, relationships, and everything else in AEW. Did you see the John Moxley Hangman Page thing last week with their foreheads touching? I was like, that's so Tunnel Talk Cody.
Oh yeah. That one I was like, oh my goodness, they're gonna really enjoy kissing pose. Today I have not finished all of today's Tunnel Talk episode, but I am like halfway through, and it is a very enjoyable one, so definitely give it a listen if you're interested.
And you can listen to that and all the other great shows on our network on any of your own podcast providers or over at Red Circle. You can also read our Social Suplex newsletter, which will be out before this episode. It will be, actually. I need to finish the last section. It's like about half an hour.
Set yourself a deadline, girl.
I'm so happy we're moving back to the regular schedule. I can't do both in one week. It's fucking
cool. I know.
but you can read that. And this week we will have some incredible stuff on Stardom's recent conversion show. We've got an argument for AEW Women's Tag Team titles. And we've got a great article from Mika on the vibe shift between AEW and WWE over this summer. Also, reviews this week of... God, like 15 Japanese promotions from Eric, who's been an incredible addition to our team. We've got more reviews for Revolution Pro Wrestling from Marigold, from David. And we've also got a review of MLW show, which only went up on Thursday night in our American section, amongst many other things. And a first-time review from Ariel as well. And yeah, I am running for everybody because I think it's been a real good collective effort.
Yes.
You know, the things that have been put together, from the way that you know, Tim just struggles with me every week, but he still makes it work, and Emmy of editing, everything like that. But I think it's a great example of how collectively coming together can put something out there that I don't think there's a depth to anything else out there right now.
Nope.
That we're putting out. So we're very proud of that. You can also find us sometimes in the Social Suplex Discord, which you can join to speak to all the hosts of On the Network, but also enjoy conversations or memes or pictures of CM Punk on a Bridger logo with rubber chicken in the Social Suplex Discord. So yeah, please come and join us there for any type of conversation. You can also find us on social media at on Twitter at Trish and Sarah Pod. Are we at Trish and Sarah?
Yes.
Have I lost it? Yeah. Oh, I don't fucking know anymore.
I don't know.
At Trish and Sarah.
Are we
checking? Somebody check.
I haven't looked around. At Trish and Sarah, yes.
Everyone's turned this off by now. It doesn't really matter.
Yeah, I know. It's right? Fine. We're just
babbling. At Trish and Sarah on X. You can find us under our own monikers on Blue Sky. You can also find us by email at trishandsarahpod@gmail.com, trishandsarahpod@gmail.com. We're back very shortly, so this is a shorter episode this week, but we are back next week. So you will not be waiting a fortnight for the next one, and we'll try and come up with some topics. Shall we open some questions as well?
Yeah, send us some questions. Yeah? I would love
Have some questions. Send us some questions. We'll follow Tunnel Talk's lead from last week, and we will answer some questions next week. So send us there, send us a Discord, send them on Twitter, send them in DMs. Somebody on Tumblr, I don't know. Send them everywhere. Let's have some questions for next week.
Well, don't send it to us on Tumblr. We don't have a Tumblr account.
I have a Tumblr.
Okay.
The newsletter has a Tumblr now. Emmy made us a Tumblr. Did you know that? The newsletter.
Yes, I did know she made a Tumblr, a newsletter. A Tumblr for the newsletter.
I just go on Tumblr to steal gifts. Let's be honest. That's why I go on Tumblr for.
You're like reverse Santa.
Yeah, me and Watt, that's what we do. We go on every Thursday and we steal the gifts. Like, that's what we've been doing for years. Anyway.
Popped myself with that one.
Reverse Santa.
Sorry.
What does that make CM Punk, like, in his rap thing? Is he, like, reverse Watt? Reverse Vanilla Ice? Like, what the fuck?
I think even Vanilla Ice would find that cringy. Like, that's how bad that shit was, girls. Like, oof.
Oh, and thanks to Seth for making the graphic of Trish and Sarah on his fingers as well, because that was very, very funny. And
that
made
was
my
a
day.
High point. I really enjoyed that. Seth was awesome. Thank you. And that just made me cackle.
Right, I've gone on far too long now on this ridiculously long close. So I have been Trish.
I've been Sarah.
This has been the Trish and Sarah Wrestling Podcast, and we will see you next week. Please send us your questions.
Yes.
Yes. Do it.
Do it.
Now.
Ha ha ha!